This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. Hello and welcome back to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com/Austin. I'm Dustin McComas. I hope if I can pronounce my name right. Your host for Texas basketball discussion, college basketball, NBA, fantasy basketball, you name it. This is what we hope is your home for anything related to Longhorns basketball on the podcast universe, or whatever you want to call it, this expanding podcast realm, even though Troy Aikman apparently doesn't know why people listen to podcasts. I got news for you, Troy. You could probably have a good one that would a lot of people listen to, and you probably get a nice sponsorship money off of that as well. So we actually have a Texas scrimmage to talk about, not one of the super secret fancy closed door ones that nobody gets to see. Those will, Texas will have a couple of those later on, including one later this week against LSU. But Texas had its annual Texas tip-off scrimmage, and a different format this year. They included the women's program, which I think was a really cool idea. It got fans a chance to see both the women's team, the men's team. The women and men competed in a three-point contest, which Matt Coleman won in a sudden death situation over Danny Williams, who is a graduate transfer from Texas A&M. By the way, if you haven't seen her quote, we were in the press conference area afterwards. Brian Davis tweeted this out about her transferring from Texas A&M to Texas as a grad transfer, and what, like, her comparison of what Texas A&M people say about Texas compared to what Texas people say or actually don't really say at all about Texas A&M. It's pretty interesting. I thought she summed it up probably as well as I've ever heard any student athlete sum that up. So check out B Davis on Twitter to see that. But Texas tip-off, so the women's program was involved. They had their scrimmage. They did their thing, three-point contest. The men did three-point contest scrimmage. They also had a dunk contest as well, and we'll start there. It was Texas fans' first glimpse at Jackson Hayes, a freshman big man from outside the Cincinnati area. Listed at 6'11", I think he's probably closer to 7 foot tall than 6'11". And athleticism is a big thing for him. It's something that really attracted Texas to him. It's something that Kentucky threw in a late offer late in his process that was legit and almost ended up swaying him away from Texas. But I don't think people realized how athletic he is until he got out there and started doing some of the dunks that he did. And it's watching a guy run and jump and move and be able to pull off dunks like he did at that height and length, pretty incredible. His first dunk, which one of the judges, Hookem, totally screwed up, gave him a 5, which is idiotic. It was just for a 7-footer to pull off that first dunk was remarkable. But then he dunks over his mom and his little brother, and then Dylan Osakowski at the end says, you know, grabs the mic, give it up for my guy Royce Ham. Royce Ham put on a show. By the way, sneaky athleticism, Royce Ham. I didn't know he had those kind of things in him. But Osakowski grabs the mic and says, "Hey, my guy Jackson Hayes basically got screwed." And it allowed Hayes to come out for another dunk, and he jumped from the free throw line. It was pretty legit. I mean, the ball of his foot was on the free throw line and did a windmill dunk at 7 foot tall. And he showed a couple of things in the scrimmage too. He had a really impressive block, some other, you know, very athletic things in the paint. This is a very high upside player, and I think one thing needs to be kept in mind about him is he's still very new to basketball, and Shaka Smart's brought this up often. Jackson Hayes basically played 6 minutes on his high school team as a junior. And he was one of those growth spurt guys. He used to be a football player. His dad is a tight ends coach at the Cincinnati Bengals. He basically outgrew football, started playing basketball. And I think one of the best traits about him that Shaka Smart points out is he picks up everything very, very quickly. And I think we're seeing that right now. I think Texas fans are going to see that over the course of the season. He's going to look way better in January than he does November. And he's going to look way better in March than he did in January and definitely in November. So it's a long-term deal with him. But one of his best attributes might be that he's just wants to be a role guy right now. He doesn't want to shoot threes. He doesn't want to handle the ball. He doesn't want to take guys off the dribble. He doesn't want to do any of these things that maybe guys like Jared Allen and Mo Bamba wanted to do, and partially because they could, even though it wasn't the best parts of their game. Jackson Hayes wants to run rim to rim. He wants to catch lobs. He wants to block shots. He wants to set good screens. He just wants to do whatever the team needs him to do. And, you know, you look at Texas' front court. We know Jericho Sims is going to play a lot of minutes. We know Dylan Osikowski is going to play a lot of minutes. Kamaka Hepa is becoming, to me, a guy that's got a legit chance to start beside Osikowski and Sims and along with Snoop Roach and Matt Coleman. Just I think a lot depends on what kind of lineup the opposition has and how well Hepa can defend and so on and so forth. But I think that he's got a chance to start, which maybe could be Courtney Ramey might kind of hitting some freshman bumps of the road the last couple of weeks, which he's a freshman. I mean, those things are going to happen. And perhaps they want to bring Elijah Long maybe off the bench or to kind of run that secondary point guard role. But anyway, you look at their front court now. We knew Hepa was going to play a role. If Hayes can give them, you know, 6 to 10 quality minutes and be able to jump in there if Jericho Sims is in foul trouble or you know, if Dylan Osikowski is in foul trouble and they want to move Sims to the four and let Hayes play the five, if they really want to go very up-tempo on both ends of the floor and get after people, he can really, really run. His development is starting to make the front court position healthier. It's going to be deeper. And Roy Sam had some really quality moments in the Texas tip-off scrimmage as well, in addition to his dunks. Played with a lot of strength and aggressiveness in the paint, which is that needs to be his role. Just be that, I like to refer to those guys as the garbage man. Just go after all the rebounds, throw your body around in the paint, be physical, just go after the game. When you're in there, and you know, Hayes, the athleticism is elite. He can actually do things like Euro step as a 7-footer. And you watch him at the free throw line. For a guy that size, the ball comes out of his hands well. I think that kind of goes back to you often see these guys that are growth spurt guys that grew up when they did play basketball playing like guard and stuff. They tend to have better feel and shooting mechanics. When they do grow as compared to guys that have just been big their entire life. So Jackson Hayes, to me, put on the show of the dunk contest and really gave Texas fans their first glimpse at just what kind of high-ceiling special athlete he is. And I put this in our orangeboys.com war room last week. Right now, NBA scouts are making the rounds to the top college programs and getting looks at guys before the season begins and kind of just doing their background work, who they like, who they don't like, who they're maybe they didn't have on their list and they've got to pay attention to. And Hayes is one of those guys that is really caught the attention of some NBA scouts. Now, I think everybody needs to keep in mind, again, he hasn't played a game in college yet, and he didn't play a lot as a high school player. So there's going to be some definite ups and downs, but I think the Texans could get something out of him to where he could be a role piece that can come off the bench and give them something in the front court. So that was one of the highlights of the Texas tip-off. And also, too, speaking of big guys, there was a point in the Texas tip-off where Matt Coleman gets this big white poster, and he starts holding it up in the air, and he's parading up and down the sideline. And you get a look at the poster, and it says, "We want Will, hashtag Bake Show." Well, 5-star Austin Westlake big man Will Baker was there at Texas tip-off. So Coleman's going up and down the sideline with this sign for Will Baker, and he makes it over to Baker, who's sitting with his parents, and Will Baker just loses it. He can't stop laughing. He's laughing. He's loving it. Coleman's got this big grin on his face. He's going up and down the sideline with this thing, and eventually Will Baker's mom calls Coleman back over and takes a picture of the sign. So Matt Coleman making his pitch to try to get Will Baker. Longhorns getting him on campus again is nothing but a good sign. I think that recruitment is going to start winding down in terms of a decision. I'd be surprised if he doesn't decide by that first early November period. And I think things are trending positively for Texas. You know, Shaka Smart said after the game, Matt Coleman is going to be a college coach at some point, and he's going to be a great recruiter. And we just saw another example of that during the Texas tip-off scrimmage. Speaking of the scrimmage, it was just a 12-minute scrimmage, which was kind of a bummer. I know they had to fit everything in on LHN. In the past, they've scrimmaged much longer. So as much as I want to take a lot away from a 12-minute scrimmage, to be honest, there really wasn't much to take away. It was orange versus white. Orange team starters, if I'm remembering correctly, led by GM Jericho Sims. Sims, Coleman, Roach, Liddell, and who am I missing on the last one? Roy Sam was on that team. You look at the other team, Osikowski, Elijah Long, Jace Febris, Courtney Ramey, Jackson Hayes, Brock Cunningham. So, Kamaka Hepa also on the orange team. So, orange team got the best of the white team, 31-19. I thought Snoop Roach was the best player on the floor. Really pushed pace well. Mechanics looked improved both from beyond the arc and the free throw line. He was perfect shooting from deep and at the line. Looked healthy. On that note, he said that he's still not quite 100% since that meniscus injury. Obviously, if there was any sort of issue, they would have held him out of the scrimmage. He said that he had some pain a couple days ago, but that he'd felt fine during the scrimmage. They're still monitoring his scrimmage. I mean, his practice minutes and things like that. I'd be shocked if he's not full go once the November 6th season opener arrives. But just something to file away with him. I thought he looked terrific. And Shaka Smart said the highlight for him, after he paused to think about it, of the scrimmage was Coleman and Roach playing together. And I put up a piece on orangebloods.com yesterday. I think those two and their playmaking and their maturity and their leadership, which is something both talked a lot about, is their voices and how they need to be heard and how they need to lead. I think those two could define Texas season. It's guards. Teams go often as guards go in college basketball, and especially the Big 12. Look at the teams that have had success in the Big 12, especially those Kansas teams. A lot of those teams have two playmaking guards, not just one, but two. I mean, think most recently to Frank Mason and Devontae Graham. I mean, that type of situation, if you can have two guys that are playmaking type guards that can create for themselves and others and just run the show, that's so much of a plus to have. And Texas is going to have that. It wanted to have that last year. Of course, Andrew Jones' leukemia diagnosis sort of derailed that. And with Coleman being a freshman, it's although I think he played very well for a freshman in the Big 12, and especially against that schedule, you know, there were some up and down moments with him being a freshman. Now you got Roach, that's a senior. Now you got Coleman, that's a sophomore. Those two guys in the starting lineup playing off of each other, I think could really define what kind of season Texas has. And just another full year for them in terms of experience. They've played a lot of minutes. Coleman played 34 minutes a game as a freshman. Snoop Roach has played, I think, a little over 2,600 minutes in his career, a lot of starts. So these are experienced players. And that to me is those two and how they play together and how they lead and the type of maturity they show on the floor. I think that's going to go the farthest in determining what kind of season Texas has. They're going to be the ones a lot of the time controlling the pace, the energy, offering that poise on the ball, pushing tempo, getting guys involved, elevating teammates. You know, Texas wants Dylan Osikowski to be a focal point. They want Jericho Sims to be a focal point. There are some guys that can help in their own roles, like Elijah Long, Kamaka Hepik, Courtney Ramey, maybe Jace Febrish, Royce Ham, on down the list. But I think the Longhorns are going to go as Roach and Coleman go. And, I mean, we kind of got a glimpse of that in the scrimmage. I don't think it was a coincidence that those two guys in the same team ended up winning the scrimmage by 12 points and often looked like, you know, two of the best players on the floor. So, and I mentioned Andrew Jones. It was great to see him out there at Texas Tip-Off. He didn't have a boot on. I've heard he hasn't needed to wear that boot for a few days prior to Texas Tip-Off. I expect him to probably be back from that toe injury sooner rather than later. And he was smiling, energetic. He got two standing ovations, which was really cool. And he was putting up a lot of shots, just kind of, you know, when people were warming up and stuff. His shot looks good, man. Sometimes you get these guys, and when they miss a lot of time, it offers them an opportunity just to shoot the basketball and work on that part of their game. And it looked good coming out of Andrew Jones's hand, and that's something that the Longhorns could really use if he's able to get back on the floor. I say if, just because, I mean, we don't know exactly how this thing is going to play out, but the if is becoming less and less of an if. I mean, he was practicing well before the injury, although they are monitoring his minutes. I think everybody's being cautious, but it might just reach a point where they just let him play, or in practice, just let him go. I mean, he's, you know, there's nothing that's going to happen in practice that's going to negatively impact, you know, his battle against leukemia. I mean, he completed his chemotherapy. He's in remission. So that could be something that really adds to that guard rotation for the Longhorns, even if it's just 10 or 12 minutes a game, which I think is probably the most likely outcome. And we know Texas needs shooting. And we know that Andrew Jones was by far the best shooter on Texas roster last year. You look at the numbers. His numbers were way better than anybody else's in the 10 games he played. So great to see Andrew out there. I think it's sooner rather than later for him in regard to the toe injury. And I think this is going to be an awesome story. I really think this is going to have a really, really great ending. And I'm not betting against Andrew Jones. So some other scrimmage takeaways. When Texas was pushing tempo and it was mostly the orange team with Coleman and Roach, that was when they were at their best. And that's what they have to dedicate themselves to this year, is anytime they have a chance, they talk about having this 7-second mentality. They want to score within the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. Well, they need to live that, eat that, breathe that, sleep that, because that is when they're at their best. They have the athleticism. They have the depth. They have the guards. They had the bigs that can really run the floor too, which is a key part in that. So that's when they looked at their best, I think. Offensively, they didn't really show too much. It was a more of a fun vibe with the scrimmage, as opposed to a game-like scenario. They did run a few sets. A couple of them looked pretty good. One in particular had Dylan Osakowski running off some action away from the ball to get down to the low post. He got a touch, kicked it out to the corner for a wide open look. So they did do some things offensively, but a lot of it was a lot of pick and roll, pick and pop. The ball moved okay. It got stuck at some times, which, you know, is going to happen, especially when you're playing each other. When everybody knows, hey, if it's Hepa sitting the screen, he's probably going to pop. If it's Osakowski sitting the screen, he's probably going to pop. If it's Hazer Sims, they're going to roll, that type of deal. So I don't think there was really much to take away from the offense other than they want to push tempo. And with Roach and Coleman especially, I think that they're going to be able to do that. And I'll be curious too if they extend the floor on defense and use some pressing. When the white team was down, they went to it. Texas has the depth and the athletes to do it. Shaka Smart mentioned on last Monday that they're, in terms of percentage, they're going to do it more than they did last year. They wanted to do it more than they did last year, but the depth became an issue. So I think that we're going to see it. If I'm Shaka Smart, and I know he has reservations about doing it in the Big 12 against quality guards and, you know, different mentality of player at Texas and so on and so forth, I think that he has some of the mental makeup and bodies, more so than any other roster he's had at Texas, to use that. So I think that that's something that can maybe keep an eye on. And that takes me to Big 12 Media Day. Again, you're listening to the Dropping Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com, and grab a sip here of my sparkling water because of the Austin boil water notice. Is it a ban? I don't know. But city of Austin, because of all the rain, apparently in the flooding, has led to a water shortage and also in terms of filtration. So we can't drink tap water. We can't drink filtered water out of the fridge. If you're going to drink water, you got to boil it. So I am rocking the Waterloo sparkling water today. If you haven't had Waterloo sparkling water, I'm normally biased towards LaCroix and HEB sparkling water. Waterloo is taking over the top spot for me, but that's another discussion for another day. So Big 12 Media Day is Wednesday. That is tomorrow in Kansas City, the annual Big 12 Media Day. I am flying up to Kansas City later today. It's an event that, like, a lot of things get jammed into a short amount of time. So basically it gets going at like 8 or 8:30, I think 8:30. And then it's done at like 2:30 or 3. I mean, coaches and players are out of there. They're flying back because they want to get to practice and have practice and stuff. So it basically opens with, you know, Bob Bowlesby usually speaks, and then they go through just this public, you know, generic press conference setting where each Big 12 coach comes up there and fields questions from all the reporters there. Each guy's usually at the podium for like 8 or 9 minutes, not very long. It's usually very generic stuff. You don't really get much out of that setting. But the quality part is you get the breakout opportunities where each team's players will sit at a podium for, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, take all the questions you want. And then later the coaches will come and they're at their own area and they'll take questions for 30, 45 minutes. So it's a great opportunity to just really pick the brain of players and coaches and get a great feel for, you know, what the upcoming season could hold, what they're focused on, things like that. Maybe, you know, I often learn things at this event that I didn't know going into it or that I can file away and go back to later in the season. So, I'll be up there. Shaka Smart will be up there. I believe Texas will be represented by Dylan Osikowski, Snoop Roach, and Matt Coleman. Not a surprise. Two seniors, your senior leaders, and then Coleman, your sophomore point guard and another leader on that team. So looking forward to talking to those guys. But yeah, it's a lot jammed into a short amount of time. You know, Big 12 football media days are multiple days, and they kind of spread it out some. Basketball, it's condensed, and everybody's out of there by about 3 or 3:30 and heading to their private planes or to the airport. So we'll have some notes from that at orangebloods.com, and it's something that I'll talk about on the next Dropping Dimes podcast next week. But just some topics bouncing around in my head. I mean, Bill Self, what kind of questions has he asked about the Hoops corruption trial? I mean, his name and some of his assistant coaches came up in that trial as it relates to Zion Williamson, Sylvian D'Souza, the Adidas people that are, you know, the ones under trial. I mean, I guess I need to watch more Law and Order. But, you know, the ones that are trying to find out their fate, whether they're guilty or not. And you've got the people representing these Adidas executives and Christian Dawkins, the former agent, runner, whatever you want to call them. And they're basically trying to say, hey, you know, we weren't defrauding the schools. The schools wanted our help. So they're willing to dish it all out to make it look like that. And, you know, I think that Bill Self's going to have some tough questions to answer in those breakout sessions, because there will be some national reporters there, you know, wanting to hear what he has to say. And all of this stuff happened after Kansas' individual media day. So he really hasn't been asked too much about it. That'll be something to follow. In terms of some things I will be asking Shaka Smart, who's going to be that fifth starter? You know, I mentioned it early on. Is it going to be Ramey, Hepa, Long, maybe a surprise? We know that Osikowski, Sims, Coleman, and Roach are going to start, barring a complete stunner. Those are going to be four of the five starters. But who makes up that fifth starter role? And I go back to something Shaka Smart said last Monday about the pressing deal. And he was like, you know, some of my assistants don't like doing it, but I like it, and I'm the head coach, so it's my call. And he had this grin on his face. And it's the first time I've heard him speak like that about pressing. He usually kind of tries to find ways to downplay it because he doesn't really want to use it that much. Or maybe he does, but he knows they're not going to use it that much. It was the first time in my head I was kind of like, huh, he's talking about this differently, a little bit differently than he has in the past. So I'm going to ask him in more detail about that. You know, maybe it's something that maybe his opinion has changed on it. I'm not sure. Ask him about the progress of his freshmen. A lot of those guys are going to have to play some roles. You know, how big of a role is Jackson Hayes going to play? Is Jericho Sims showing them enough right now in practice? It sounds like he's got his flashes of dominance, which you saw in Texas tip-off. I mean, he got the ball in the block one time, spun around Hayes and dunked it, and then caught an oop in the open floor when on a press break as well. And then he had a kind of a ugly turnover at another point as well. By the way, he's shooting free throws right-handed. he's gone Tristan Thompson, and Sims is basically ambidextrous, but he's now shooting free throws right-handed. And you know what? It didn't look bad coming out of his hand. It had better rotation. So that'll be something to follow. You know, just picking the brains of Roach and Coleman about their role as leaders and running the team and you know, how their mindset and the team's mindset is different now. You know, is Shaka feeling any pressure to win this season? It's his fourth year. He's 50-50 at Texas. They don't have any NCAA tournament wins. The Big 12 coaches voted Texas to finish in a tie for fourth. They're not ranked in the AP top 25, although they are 16th in the KenPom.com preseason computer rankings, which is something Texas fans should be optimistic about, because last season, KenPom projected Texas to be the number 37 team, I think, or the number 36 team, and they ended up being 37th or 36. I can't remember which one it was, but basically, the computers nailed it last year, although I wonder if the computers would have nailed it if Andrew Jones was healthy the entire year. But anyway, you know, they were right on. I mean, the KenPom computer was right on, and it's high on Texas this year, particularly on the jump it's going to make offensively in terms of its efficiency. And I think that speaks to the amount of experience Texas is going to have now. I mean, that's how you win in college basketball if you're not Duke and Kentucky, is experience, good experience. And then you bring your freshmen along as role guys that can kind of add to that as the season goes on. So, you know, I'll ask Shaka about, you know, thoughts about not being ranked. And does this team have a chip on its shoulder? Especially Coleman. He wasn't mentioned on the Bob Cousy Award watch list for best point guard in the country. This is a guy that outplayed Trae Young twice in head-to-head matchups last season. And Trae Young just had 35 points and 11 assists in an NBA game. Matt Coleman is legit. I think that he's going to be one of the best point guards in the country this year. Does Coleman have a chip on his shoulder about not being preseason All Big 12 or not being on these point guard lists? So a lot of things to go over at Big 12 Media Day. And you can catch all that coverage at orangeblaze.com. And then next week on the Yak, we'll go over some of the main points and takeaways from that event. And again, you're listening to the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com, episode 8. The NBA season is underway, and it's already, I guess, interesting is the right word. Of course, we had the Lakers Rockets. Can we call it a brawl? There were punches thrown. Rajon Rondo looked like he spit on Chris Paul. Chris Paul put his hand or his finger and poked Rondo in the face. Rondo swung at him. He landed one. It looked like Paul landed two. Brandon Ingram lost his mind. He got so upset that James Harden drew a foul call on him, and it just kind of started this whole thing. And then he comes running out of nowhere throwing a punch. Everybody on that court is lucky that PJ Tucker didn't want to fight, because it would have ended poorly for somebody. Speaking of the Rockets, sluggish out of the gate, and I think it goes to Clint Capella. They got beat up in the interior by the Pelicans, and the Pelicans are going to do that to people this year, but they got beat up there. JaVale McGee had some moments in the paint against the Rockets, and then the Rockets lose to the Clippers. And again, the interior area, defensively and offensively, just not quite what it was last season. I think part of that is teams when Houston is switching, Capella's getting pulled out to the perimeter a lot because he is that athletic and long. He can hang with those guys out there, and it's kind of leaving nobody in terms of a shot blocking presence in the interior. That's going to be something to follow with the Rockets. I'm not worried about them, but I do that is slightly concerning because the Rockets lost their defensive coordinator, and it was already a bit of a question heading into the season how they would handle that defensively. I think that's something to follow. Spurs-Lakers were in an incredible overtime game where LeBron went from like hero to the opposite of hero. And DeMar DeRozan, I'm not surprised about this. He's a very skilled and talented offensive player. He looks good. He looks good under Greg Popovich in San Antonio. I still think that Spurs over-under win total of 42.5, and then everybody kind of counting them almost out of the playoffs is going to look incorrect as the season goes on. I think they're going to get Popovich is going to get the most out of those guys. And back to the Lakers, they are what I thought they were. There's going to be stretches of games where their talent's on display and they're running up and down and they look great. And we're already seeing it. There's going to be moments of the game where some of those knuckleheads like Rondo and Lance Stephenson, just you can't depend on them. They're going to fire up bad shots. They're going to commit some awful foul. They're going to get ejected. JaVale McGee was shooting the ball like he was, DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, he was putting up a lot of shots against the Rockets. Like, it's not a very dependable roster. And I think we're seeing it already. The Lakers are winless. If LeBron gets this team deep into the playoffs, it's going to be quite an accomplishment. But hey, we've said this about LeBron in the past with some, cast of characters that aren't that good. But really, that was more from a talent standpoint. There weren't many, besides J.R. Smith, the Cleveland roster had some quality vets. They had some guys that knew their roles. That's Lakers roster is, it's got a combustion level higher of any other roster in the NBA. And we're starting to already see some signs of that. We'll see how LeBron is handling things once the season gets a couple months in. And the Mavs, Luka Doncic, I probably butchered that pronunciation, but their first round pick this year, showing some good stuff already. Dennis Smith Jr. was an incredible talent coming out with me. The big question was the makeup. Was he going to, put in the work, and was he going to be a guy that was going to, become a professional? And so far, so good. DeAndre Jordan's been a quality fit. So the Mavs have a little something. They're not going to make the playoffs this year, but I think that they have a little bit of a core right now that they can build off of in the future with some of their younger pieces. So the NBA season doesn't have my full attention, but I'm not surprised at all that I'm already following it closely and peeking into it, even though it is October. I almost said November because the season used to start around Halloween. So we'll see. There's been a lot of sluggish starts kind of around the league. The Warriors dropped a game. The Celtics have not looked bad, but they're not getting the wins right now like many people thought they would. I think that's kind of the NBA, and that could be a product too of the season starting starting earlier than it used to. Some of these rosters, new pieces, guys got to figure out how they communicate, how they mesh, how they switch on defense, how they want to play on offense, those sorts of things, and they take time. So you're going to see some uneven results going on. But that does it for me today on this edition of the Droppin' Dimes podcast, episode 8. I hope you enjoyed it. Covered some Texas tip-off, previewing the Big 12 Media Day, which takes place tomorrow in Kansas City, and ended with some NBA discussion. Make sure you're going to theact.com/Austin. Get all the Texas football discussion. You can check out my Extra Bases podcast about the Texas baseball team. Last week, I went on and on and on about Texas pitchers and then gave a full breakdown of Texas' scrimmage recently against McLennan. So get to that. I'll have some World Series discussion this week. on the next episode of Extra Bases. But go check out Jeff Ketchum's work, Omar Richardson, Jason Sukumel's recruiting podcast, Alex Dunlap's football podcast. More podcast content than you can handle in a week, really. I mean, we got you covered every day, all week, at theyak.com/Austin. So until next time, we will see you next week for the next installment of the Dropping Dimes podcast as we get 1 week closer to the opening of the Texas basketball season. Season opener, November 6th. We're almost there. Until then, watch some hoops.